Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have stories on the ongoing MP18 wildfire in Hoopa Valley, and on the Humboldt Bay Area plan considering other industrial uses besides wind energy. But first, some local alerts and updates. This is KMUD News. Starting off in Mendocino. There was a small but quick-growing wildfire in the Potter Valley on the 9,000 block of State Highway 20, first reported around noon. The fire briefly closed Highway 20 from milepost 42 to the Lake County line. Fire spread was initially reported as critical and slowed down once the fire reached 10 acres. CAL FIRE air attack was quickly on scene and no structures were threatened. And by 3 p.m., forward progress of the fire had stopped and the highway was reopened. Another amazing job by our local firefighters in Mendocino County. From the North Coast Water Board. The North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board adopted a permit for commercial lily bulb growers in the Smith River Plain. The order requires growers to prevent agricultural pollutants, including pesticides and nutrients, from reaching the Smith River Plain watershed. It calls for erosion controls, vegetated buffers along waterways, and improved pesticide and nutrient management. Quote, "The Smith River is California's largest undammed water system, which supports important aquatic species and tribal uses. These requirements reflect years of collaboration to protect water quality in a manner tailored to a unique agricultural industry," end quote, said Valerie Quinto of the North Coast Water Board. The river supports salmon, steelhead, and other aquatic species. River quality monitoring identified pesticides from lily bulb operations in nearby waterways, prompting the board to act. These rules were developed with input from growers, the Tolowa Dene Nation, and other stakeholders to protect the watershed while allowing commercial lily bulb production to continue. In addition to the order, the board also certified the final environmental impact report prepared for the program under the California Environmental Quality Act. From the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office. On August 6th at approximately 10:30 p.m., Mendocino County Sheriff's Office deputies were dispatched to the 1,000 block of Redwood Drive in Redwood Valley to assist Howard Forrest medical personnel with a report of a subject in possession of a knife. Deputies learned a male subject, later determined to be the 77-year-old victim of the case, confronted James Hoffman after discovering Hoffman had been making unauthorized purchases using the victim's credit card dating back to 2024. Medical personnel and the sheriff's office responded when Hoffman reportedly armed himself with a knife and locked himself inside a bedroom at the residence. Hoffman and the victim resided together, and the victim provided Hoffman with limited access to his financial accounts for the purpose of paying authorized household expenses. Hoffman was locked inside a bedroom at the residence and ultimately surrendered to law enforcement without further incident. Based on the investigation and financial records, sheriff's deputies developed probable cause to believe Hoffman knowingly used the victim's financial accounts for unauthorized personal transactions. Hoffman was ultimately arrested and booked into the Mendocino County Jail for financial elder abuse, grand theft, and embezzlement. Hoffman was transported and booked into the jail, but later released from custody after posting $25,000 bail. From the Humboldt Sheriff's Department, and likely follow-up to last week's cannabis enforcement helicopter operations. On August 6th, deputies with the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office Marijuana Enforcement Team, also known as MET, served a search warrant to investigate illegal cannabis cultivation in the Willow Creek area. The Trinity County Sheriff's Office and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife assisted in service of the warrant. The parcel had previously been licensed through the California Department of Cannabis Control to cultivate cannabis commercially, but it's since been suspended for a number of issues, including not possessing the required County of Humboldt permits to cultivate. During ongoing aerial surveillance efforts, MET deputies were able to determine that this parcel had active cultivation occurring in violation of state law. During service of the warrant, deputies eradicated approximately 6,000 growing cannabis plants and seized and destroyed over 480 pounds of shake. Deputies also located and seized one rifle. Additionally, four individuals were located on scene working at the cultivation site. Through the investigation, it was determined these individuals were not being properly compensated as required by state law for their labor. Deputies also documented unsafe and inadequate living conditions at the site. Elvisio Machado, 54 years old, of Lafayette, California, was arrested and booked into the Humboldt County Correctional Facility on the following charges: felony marijuana cultivation, maintaining a place for illicit drugs, disobeying a court order, stream bed alteration, littering in a waterway, and failure to properly pay employees. From the Watershed Research and Training Center, or WRTC for short. The WRTC is partnering with the Trinity County Resource Conservation District for another season of free community chipping in Trinity County. This program helps landowners reduce the risk of wildfire spreading on private property by disposing of woody debris piles. Landowners are asked to stack tree branches, brush, and other woody materials in orderly piles along an accessible part of their property so WRTC crews can feed the material into a wood chipper. This is an important service for property owners to maintain their defensible space and prepare for fire season. This season, WRTC crew will be chipping in the following areas during the first 2 weeks of September: in Hayfork, September 1st to the 3rd, Hyampom, the 7th, Wildwood and Trinity Pines, the 8th, Ruth and Mad River, the 9th, and Kettenpalm and Xenia on September 10th. Additional chipping days will be scheduled if WRTC receives more chipping requests than can be treated in a single day. The Watershed Center appreciates and values all the landowners who put an effort into reducing their fuel load by stacking their piles and will make sure that those who sign up are visited by a chipping crew. Landowners south of Hayfork Summit, please contact the WRTC office at 530-628-4206 to enroll in free fall chipping. For landowners downriver in Northern Trinity or in Middle Trinity, please contact TCRCD at 530-623-6004, extension 219, or visit firesafetrinity.org to enroll in free chipping services. The Trinity County Resource Conservation District will announce their community chipping days later this fall to serve the Downriver, Middle Trinity, and North Lake communities. Landowners can prepare for chipping by hand stacking limbs and brush in piles along a road or driveway and excluding branches larger than 10 inches in diameter. Please keep piles smaller than 4 feet tall and less than 100 feet long. For safety reasons, piles must be free of nails, wire, rocks, mud, invasive plants, vines, or anything that could harm the chipping crews. Please contact the WRTC or TCRD offices if you have questions about pile specifications. The service is free thanks to funding from the U.S. Forest Service Community Wildlife Defense Grant, USFS Resource Advisory Committee, and Title III of the Secure Rural Schools and Self-Determination Act, administered through Trinity County. The chipping crews are looking forward to helping make your property more fire safe this fall. And up next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. The MP18 wildfire continues to burn in the northeast Hoopa Valley, KMUD News reports. KMUD's listening area has been greatly impacted by the MP18 fire that started in the Hoopa Valley on Friday evening. It now stands at around 1,335 acres as of this broadcast recording in the early evening of Monday, August 10th. The fire started around milepost 18 of State Highway 96, which has been closed to traffic due to ongoing fire operations. Caltrans confirmed the highway will continue to be closed overnight due to the fire. The MP-18 fire grew to approximately 374 acres on Saturday, before being reported at 500 acres on Sunday morning. Sunday saw more rapid growth, and by Sunday, the MP-18 fire in Hoopa Valley was estimated at 1,335 acres via data from perimeter mapping by CAL FIRE. That number stayed reported as the same on Monday, August 10th. Hoopa Valley Tribal Chairman Joe Davis has declared a state of emergency due to risks posed by the wildfire for residents and property. There are currently evacuation warnings in place for most of the eastern side of the Hoopa Valley, and residents should pack their belongings and be ready to leave. KMUD News spoke with Hoopa Emergency Manager Rob Roy Latham today to learn more about current firefighting efforts and the situation on the ground.
The current fire situation is firefighters remain actively engaged in suppression operations. Priorities are to fully suppress the fire, protect communities, provide property, infrastructure, cultural values, and natural resources, limit fire growth, and keep the fire west of Mill Creek drainage, south of Bull Creek and Norton Creek, and east of Highway 96. Fire operations. Crews are improving dozer lines, standing hose lays, and using direct attack where conditions allow. Dozers are reopening existing dozer lines and improving roads, providing safer firefighter access and stronger barriers against fire spread. Mop up west of Highway 96 continues to reduce the potential for the fire to spread outside the current footprint. Steep terrain, snag hazards, limited natural barriers and access, and the potential for extreme fire behavior continue to make the incident operationally complex. Additionally, engines, heavy equipment crews, and aircraft are supporting suppression efforts. Public safety, avoid closed or restricted fire areas, especially the Mill Creek, Big Hill areas, and give firefighters an emergency equipment room to operate. Continue monitoring official emergency information and be prepared to respond promptly if conditions change or additional public safety instructions are issued. Evacuation. There are no new evacuation orders at this time. Continue to monitor Humboldt County, Everbridge, and Zonehaven for official alerts for evacuation updates. Road closure. Highway 96 is currently under a hard closure for safety reasons and fire traffic. Follow all directions from law enforcement and fire personnel. Prohibited fire active roads. Residents must stay away from prohibited fire active roads, including Hostler Ridge, Mill Creek Road, and Big Hill Road. These roads are restricted for active fire suppression and emergency traffic. Do not enter unless specifically authorized by fire or law enforcement personnel. Firefighters and public safety remain our highest priorities.
That was Hoopa Emergency Manager Rob Roy Latham with an update on the ongoing MP-18 fire in the Hoopa Valley. As he stated, Route 96 is still under a hard closure, evacuation warnings are in effect, and residents need to stay away from Hostler Ridge, Mill Creek Road, and Big Hill Road. As of this broadcast recording, evacuation warnings are active for zones HIA-E002, HIA-E003, HIA-E004, HIA-E006, and HIA-E014-A. You can also check out the Watch Duty app or call Humboldt County OES on their after hours line at 707-445-7251 for more information. Air quality across our region has been impacted greatly by the MP-18 fire in Hoopa. That will likely continue. The North Coast Air Quality Management District stated today, quote, "The recent MP-18 fire located just north of the town of Hoopa along the east side of Highway 96 within the Hoopa Valley Reservation is generating the smoke mostly in Humboldt and Trinity County. Presently, smoke impacts are locally greater within the Hoopa Valley from predominant northerly winds affecting the town of Hoopa and Weechpec. Overall, smoke is mainly affecting the Hoopa Valley and then traveling southeast along the Trinity River, impacting towns along Highway 299 into Weaverville and Hay Fork. Smoke is also traveling along the South Fork Trinity River into Higham Palm and seen as far south as Ruth Lake, and additionally affecting communities along the Klamath River within the Yurok Reservation. Smoke modeling indicates that smoke may continue to affect communities. A shift in wind direction and change in the weather may also cause widespread haze along the coast and affect other areas. Over the next few days, smoke impacts may see AQI or air quality index levels that range from unhealthy for sensitive groups to even periods of unhealthy to very unhealthy at times. End quote. We will continue to keep our listeners updated on the MP18 fire in Hoopa Valley on our newscast, via on-air alerts, and our social media channels, all provided by the KMUD News Department and our emergency response team. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. With offshore wind energy development less than assured, Humboldt County's Planning Commission is leaving port development open to other industrial uses. Daniel Mintz reports.
Workshopping a draft Humboldt Bay Area Plan, the county's Planning Commission is highlighting the importance of offshore wind energy, but leaving industrial port activity open for other uses. The extent of restricting heavy-lift marine terminals, which will be necessary for wind energy but could also be used for other industrial purposes, was weighed as the commission held workshops on the plan. Enthusiasm for wind energy has been tempered by a disappointing turn of events. One of the holders of an offshore ocean wind energy development lease, RWE US Offshore, is vacating its Humboldt area lease and others in New York and Louisiana. The global company agreed to a payoff settlement with the Trump administration and will instead pursue US natural gas development. The turnabout was in mind on August 6th as commissioners discussed language on heavy-lift marine terminal use in a port overlay zone, which is a separate higher-level layer of policy. As voiced in these comments from Commissioner Ivor Skavdal, there was reluctance to narrowly focus the heavy-lift terminal policy to wind energy.
I have a little bit of concern when it is a planning document and we start writing it or structuring it towards a specific project that may or may not happen. And some of the brackets we're trying to put around that specific project are now going to influence other things in the general planning document.
Facilities supporting oil and gas drilling and offshore mining are prohibited in the overlay plan as the county is preparing an ordinance banning them. But commissioners said marine terminal use should be open to other uses besides wind energy. And in this exchange with Skavdal, Planning Director John Ford agreed.
Actually, when you think about it a little bit more, if a heavy lift terminal is built and it can only be used for wind, then for whatever reason wind doesn't happen, then you've got a huge investment sitting there,
right,
without a use. And there could be other uses that are compatible with the values of Humboldt County and what's allowed in the zoning.
Absolutely. And we talk about throughout this document about this port being, you know, one of a few available on the West Coast. And sometimes there's things that happens, like if you build it, things will come. And if we did have a heavy lift terminal, we don't know what industries or what businesses in the future might look at or want.
Commissioner Jerome Kiriazzi noted public comment from the previous workshop, where speakers warned against allowing heavy and potentially impactful industrial uses. And while Commissioner Lorna McFarlane noted RWE's lease withdrawal, she also said the county's harbor district is going to continue forward with wind energy port development plans. Potential for future changes were discussed by Commissioner Peggy O'Neill.
What I've seen in the past is if the price of the generation of fuel fluctuate, sometimes an industry is going full guns like a biomass plant and then just close down, you know. So right now wind is the ticket, but 5, 10, 15 years, it might be something else because it's not, you know, generating income. And that's going to be the primary reason why you would want to keep it open. So that fluctuates, you know, depending on what's happening. So we don't know what kind of technology is coming in the future. It could be, you know, we're using water to generate energy. So that's why I liked when you brought up renewable energy as an alternative to just wind, because wind is good now and it may not be in the future or might not be affordable.
The commission agreed to call out wind energy in the preamble section of the plan, referencing the importance of offshore winds in reducing greenhouse gas emissions and our overall strategy of addressing climate change, said Ford, summarizing the language to be used. The plan will acknowledge, quote, that it's likely that the first project that is seen within Humboldt Bay would be a heavy lift terminal to support offshore wind, he continued. But when it gets down into the actual provisions, it's just going to be a reference to a heavy lift marine terminal, he said, drawing agreement from commissioners. The workshop will continue on September 3rd. Also included in the draft plan are policies on avoiding and mitigating harm to environmentally sensitive areas, prioritizing land uses such as coastal-dependent industrial, wastewater discharge, housing, and mitigating impacts to culturally significant areas. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
California wins preliminary injunction blocking Shasta County from requiring ID to vote. Pacifica Radio reports.
A California Superior Court judge has issued a preliminary injunction blocking Shasta County from implementing or enforcing its Measure B, which would require voters to present government-issued photo ID to register to vote or vote in person. It would also eliminate voting by mail and most early voting options and create a separate county system disconnected from the state's voter registration system. California Attorney General Rob Bonta and Secretary of State Shirley Weber filed the lawsuit, arguing that the proposed legislation was legally defective and beyond the scope of Shasta County's authority. And the judge agreed. Shirley said in a press release that the ruling made clear that creating unnecessary barriers does not strengthen democracy, it weakens it.
This week marks the 61st anniversary of the Voting Rights Act, signed into law by President Lyndon Baines Johnson in 1965, which was designed to eliminate racial discrimination in voting by fully enforcing the voting protections guaranteed by the 14th and 15th Amendment. It was considered the legislative crown jewel of the civil rights movement. We ask Sophie Lakin, director of the ACLU Voting Rights Project, to weigh in on the Voting Rights Act in view of current attempts to claim it is no longer necessary.
The 15th Amendment promised back in 1870 that no one could be denied the right to vote because of their race. And for almost 100 years, it was denied anyway, not in just a few places. Across much of the country, we have literacy tests, poll taxes, straight up voter intimidation. There were states where almost no Black citizens could register. The Voting Rights Act changed that. 61 years ago this week, it banned those literacy tests. It stopped discriminatory voting rules before they could take effect. And in Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, it gave citizens themselves the ability to go to court when a practice discriminated against them, and that is a permanent nationwide protection. And it worked. Within a few years, Black registration across the South rose dramatically. Black candidates won offices that had been closed to them for generations. One of them is a client of ours, Dr. Press Robinson. This law made democracy real for people it had only been promised to. That's why we call it the crown jewel of the civil rights movement. And now I'd say that it never finished the work, but it showed the work could be done. But in recent years, the safeguards that made that progress possible have been steadily stripped away by court decisions, most recently in the devastating Supreme Court ruling out of Louisiana this past spring, and by Congress declining to restore those safeguards. So this anniversary isn't just a commemoration. It's a moment that really asks something of us.
A landmark Supreme Court decision this year, Louisiana versus Calais, struck down Louisiana's congressional map as unconstitutional. Again, the ACLU's Sophie Lakin.
Right in the aftermath of the Supreme Court's decision in Louisiana versus Calais, which is the decision that severely weakened that Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, that nationwide permanent ban on discriminatory voting practices, including in map drawing. We saw states rushing in to take advantage of the door opened by the Supreme Court in that ruling before the ink was even dry. Three states, Louisiana, Tennessee, Alabama, have maps debuting this year that diminished the voting power of Black voters. Louisiana is, I think, a good example of how it's unfortunately been done. Black voters are a third of that state. The map packed some into one district and then split the rest. So out of six districts, they could elect a candidate of their choice in exactly one. For 60 years, the Voting Rights Act gave voters a way to challenge maps like that in court, where voters are facing real barriers, political and socioeconomic, to having an equal say. And then in this spring, the Supreme Court gutted that protection. And we're gearing up for the fact that many other states are moving in that same direction, and that we will be seeing, again, new maps that diminish the voting strength of voters of color, not just in the South, but across this country.
In a related event, Lakin talks about a hearing in Massachusetts on Friday where the ACLU is challenging restrictions to mail-in voting, which about 80% of Californians use.
We asked for the court to revisit, again, our challenge to the mail voting provisions directive to the USPS to essentially serve as a gatekeeper to who can obtain a mail ballot. And we asked the court to block that provision in all 50 states where our clients have members and have voters, millions of members who are at risk of disenfranchisement, the very least of confusion and uncertainty about their mail ballots in every single state in this country. So we were before the court on Friday asking her to put that on hold in advance of the election so that the rules that everyone knows and can have certainty around are in place, at least for this upcoming election.
Sophie Lakin is director of the ACLU Voting Rights Project.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporter for this broadcast, Daniel Mintz. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located in the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.